Hello and welcome to another episode of the Microbiome Research X podcast. I'm Adash Sandhu, an editor of the MRX website, where you can find details about the podcasts and much more. The MRX site also includes the latest news, views and research highlights on the microbiome in Japan and globally. Our guest today is Mariana Bindlos, who is an assistant professor of pathology, microbiology and immunology at Vanderbilt University Medical Center in Nashville, Tennessee. Mariana was one of the two finalists in the 2020 first annual Noster and Science Microbiome Prize for her work on microbial management. Links to details about the prize-winning essay and her research can be found on the MRX website. So Mariana, thank you for joining us today. And a quick question before we start talking about your research, but related to it, how is COVID-19 affecting your research activities in Nashville?
The cases here are not in Nashville itself. We're in Nashville, right, Tennessee, so are not that bad. So, I mean, we're still limited in, we have to wear masks everywhere we go. We have to mostly stay outside, limited in the amount of the number of people in each environment. But other than that, I think that's kind of, it's becoming the new normal in a way. I feel like you're getting kind of used to the limitations a little bit more.
And what about your research activities? How are they affected?
Yeah, so we are 50% capacity now. So we can do research, but like my group, for example, is doing shifts. So like half of the lab comes for like 6 hours in the morning, early afternoon, and then the other half of the lab comes in the early afternoon to the evening. And then I go into my office, but if I don't really need to go, I can still do a lot of the, like if I'm writing or doing something like that, I'll just do work from home. We're a little bit better than other areas. And I think I'm also lucky that my research group is not huge. So everyone's still being able to do some work, not full operational, but definitely some work.
Okay, now let's move on to your research. Do you think you can talk us through what you do, aims, motivations, and so on?
Yeah, so the work in our lab, what we try to do is try to really understand, like in a broad way, how the microbiota and the host are talking to each other to promote health. And what happens when this relationship gets disturbed for different reasons, like how that disturbance of this relationship may cause disease. So we use different models, different disease models to answer those questions. So one of the work that we're really interested in is infectious disease. So we use infectious gastroenteritis. So like salmonella infection, for example, is one of our models to try to understand what happens when an infectious agent goes into that system and disturbs that relationship and how that causes disease. And the other models that are very interested in is when we use antibiotics or when we use a diet. In our case, we use what we call a high fat obesogenic diet. So what happens when those environmental factors that we're all exposed to all the time go into your gut and disturb the relationship between the resident microbes and us as a host, and how that can contribute to different human diseases.
And I'm intrigued by why you're doing what you're doing, because your background is veterinary science. I'm wondering how you got from there to looking at the microbiome.
Sure. Yeah. I think my path exactly is different than I think most researchers in the field. And so first is because where I came from. So in Brazil, we don't go to college, right? You go straight from high school and you have to decide your career pretty much out of high school. And when I was deciding what to do in high school, I knew that I wanted to do biology. So actually my middle sister was doing veterinary medicine at the time. And she was the one that came to me and she's like, well, if you really want to do biology, maybe you should just go to vet school instead, because then you would get the background in biology and you would do a clinical degree at the same time. So if things don't work with biology, you have a clinical degree. So she was like the first person that kind of convinced me to go into veterinary medicine. But when I was in vet school, I already started doing research, so I knew I wanted to do research. I wanted to be in a laboratory setting. So I met my first advisor there, and he was a veterinary pathologist studying infectious disease, so zoonotic infectious diseases. So he was the first person that showed me how like disease works in general. I think the idea of pathology is like you're really looking at slides, you're looking at the outcome of disease, and you want to go trace it back to understand how things work. And that was like always my major interest. But initially that interest was mostly in terms of chronic diseases. So we did study a lot of diseases that are transmitted from animals to humans, especially bacterial diseases. So, but when I was thinking about doing a PhD after vet school, he told me like, if you want to do a PhD, you should really consider going overseas, like to improve your science, because science in Brazil is very limited. He's like, you should go. So I applied and I went into UC Davis in California to continue this work in chronic diseases, but really try to understand metabolic crosstalk between bacteria and the host. And that's when I was first introduced to intestinal diseases. And the lab next door to our lab was doing salmonella infection, like trying to understand really how salmonella changes the host to induce an inflammation that benefits it so it can actually bloom in the gut and transmits the next host, right? That was around the time that microbiota research was really blooming. So this was like early 2000s, well, early mid 2000s. So it's like maybe 2010. And what was interesting, I think, to us were, so the lab that I was doing my PhD and transitioning to postdoc, which is Andreas Baumler's lab at UC Davis, where I did my postdoc, he was really into trying to understand the mechanism between why are these bacterial pathogens changing the host environment, maybe from more bacterial perspective, like because what all they want to do is grow, right? Like all of those bacteria they're living in our gut. We have a very human-centered view of what they're doing because they're like, oh, they're good because they are helping us maintain health or they're causing disease. But the truth is that all of them are there. What they really want to do is survive, right? And get nutrients and outcompete other microbes. So we're really trying to understand how these bacteria can manipulate the host and manipulate other microbes in their environment to get the nutrients that they need to survive better than everyone else. So at that time we started applying, and that was a very interesting concept to me because when I was in vet school and early in my career, I was trying to understand how those chronic bacterial pathogens are doing something similar. How are they changing us or the environment so they can survive better and acquire nutrients? So we transitioned that maybe way of thinking into the gut environment, right? So that's kind of some of the questions that we are trying to answer now and where we're going is like really how this relationship is working and how microbes can benefit from it. And as a consequence of that change is human disease.
And how would you describe the main characteristics of your approach to research on the microbiome?
Yeah, so I think there's two important aspects of our work. First is that we do look mostly in one type of bacteria that we call enterobacteria assay, which are like either like some, I talk a lot about salmonella as an infectious agent, but also different strains of E. coli that are known to cause disease, right? So we use, in our models, we use strains of E. coli that produces toxin that can induce colorectal cancer. And we use another strain of E. coli that can metabolize components of our diet, such as choline. They break that down into TMA or trimethylamine that it, when it reaches our bloodstream and gets oxidized in the liver, which is kind of complicated. Anyway, this TMA can turn into another compound that has been linked to cardiovascular disease. So we use different pathogenics or bacteria that have a pathogenic potential, there are enterobacteria acid in our models. And we're trying to understand how those bacteria, the microbiota and the host, are working together or against each other in a way to promote disease. And I think another aspect of our work, I think I'm not, maybe I should even use more technology in my work, but maybe my work is not necessarily technology driven. It's more like multidisciplinary. So what we're really trying to do is bring together different disciplines to try to understand the host microbe interaction, right? So like I started my career as a veterinary pathologist. So I have like the pathology background. My PhD was a lot into like innate immunity and host microbe interaction, maybe from more of an immunology point of view. And then I ended up going towards metabolism, which was something that I never thought I was going to do. Like when I started my career, I was like, I'm an infectious disease person. I'm going to focus on that. And then all of my work has been bringing me back.
And perhaps some examples of important findings recently.
One of the key findings of my work, the resident microbiota, the beneficial microbes, so the good bacteria that live in our gut, produce specific metabolites or specific features that interact with the epithelial cells or the cells that are lining our gut, right? The first cells that are seeing the microbes. And what we found is that these metabolites that a lot of people call them short-chain fatty acids, or they're a result of the microbiota eating fiber, or the, you know, everyone says you should eat fiber. And we found out one of the reasons why you should eat fiber is because those microbes are producing this, are eating the fiber and producing these other substances that activate the cells in our gut to maintain a healthy environment. And what happens is when you take antibiotics, for example, you kill the good bacteria in our gut that produce those beneficial substances, those beneficial metabolites. And because of that, our cells don't work the way that they should. And because of that, our cells start to produce new things that different microbes can use. So it's a little bit complicated. So it's pretty much just happening when you take antibiotics. So when you disrupt that environment, us as humans or the cell, our cells, they start to produce more substances that those bad bacteria or enterobacteria acid that I was talking about, they can use that while the good microbes cannot. So they will use those new nutrients and take over the other microbes and then maybe cause disease. So what we're following up now is that we're thinking that this is a phenomena that is not just linked to antibiotic use. We think that this is happening in a different disease models. So one of the disease models that we're studying is obesity, or when you eat an obesogenic diet or a high fat diet. We think that when you eat that diet, you're also changing the microbiota, and the diet itself may be damaging the epithelial cells in our intestine, and again, changing the environment. So enterobacteria acid and the bad bacteria can come in and take over. And then, if you're lucky, you may be getting a bacteria that is not that bad for you. But if you're unlucky, some of those enterobacteria acid could be one that is producing a toxin that induces risk for colorectal cancer, or maybe producing a metabolite that has been linked to cardiovascular disease. So we're thinking that, so we're expanding our work to try to really understand how obesity and how changes in diet may be contributing to very important diseases through changes in the microbiota. One of our long-term goals is to really, by understanding this complex relationship, is to try to use ways, therapeutics, to try to prevent the expansion of those bad bacteria, or prevent, specifically, we're very interested in how prevent the damage that either the diet or the antibiotics are causing in the intestinal epithelial cells or in the cells lining our gut, to prevent the disturbance of the microbiota that happens as a consequence of that. So some of our research is definitely looking into what we can do, like which pathways or which that we can target with even known therapeutics. We think that some things are actually already available, may be helpful, and we're going to test some of that in our work for sure.
What do you think of Noster's approach to this sort of research?
I think it's actually a very smart approach, and that is kind of the way that we envision our research too. One of the key things that we are finding is that that bacteria produce different things, different metabolites or different compounds, depending on the environment around them, which is very, I think it's a very interesting way to try to understand. And that's why it's important to move our field from just using sequencing analysis into metabolic approaches, which the company is doing, because it's becoming clear to us that most of the ways that the bacteria is preventing or causing disease to us is through things that they are producing. One of the things that I say is like, we really need to start moving from in the microbiota field from just asking who is there to start asking what they're doing, you know, like, and especially in different contexts, because some of the things that we're saying is that seeing is that microbes may produce, for example, a lot of short chain fatty acids in a healthy individual, but if those same microbes are put in an environment where there is inflammation or where there's exposure to antibiotics or something, they may not be producing the same metabolites at the same rate. So if you just do a 16S analysis, for example, you're going to see that microbes are there in both ways, but you can't understand that they may be producing completely different things depending on what they're exposed to. So I do like the approach of producing the understanding what they're doing and having the metabolites to give it back to help for sure.
Okay, let's move on slightly and talk about the Noster and Science Microbiome Prize and ask you why you decided to apply.
I think I decided to apply first because a few different people sent the call my way and saying, I think this is a good fit for you. And I think the main reason is because because of the way that the essay was, or the call was put out, that is for really to understand, to show mechanistic work related to the microbiota. And that's definitely one of the things that I'm very interested in, is to really try to ask questions of why, like, why is this happening? How those things, the microbiota host interactions are happening, to really try to understand mechanistically what is going on. So I think that was the major reason why I applied. I felt like the work that I had done and during my postdoc and the work that I want to do during my independent career would fit very well with what I'd ask.
So how did you go about putting the essay together? Perhaps you can share some insights into what you did that other people who may be thinking about applying this year may want to refer to.
Yeah, I think that's the most challenging thing, is to, especially when you're working with pathways, right? You're working with like metabolism of bacteria, metabolism of the host and pathways, and how do you put that in a language or in a way that people can understand and can relate. So I think the process was first to really pretty much put your ideas in paper, like what you want to convey to people, and then send it to other people, especially people outside your field or people that are not, they don't even know your work that well, and ask them to read and give you feedback and say how you can make it easier or more understandable to a broad audience. And this process takes a while. There's a lot of revisions. And in my case, I sent it to like even my students or my postdocs that were just starting, to see if they could understand. And I sent it to other people outside my field to see if they could understand where we were and what I was trying to convey. And it takes a while. I say it takes like at least 2-3 weeks to get at least the first draft.
And how long did it take in total before you submitted it to Science?
I think probably about a month, I would say. But I think for me, one thing that was helpful is that right before this essay, I had written a review on summarizing some of what I had done in my postdoc and where I wanted my work to go. So that made it, I think, a little bit easier because I already have a draft. I had maybe a longer draft of at least, and I had already put my thoughts together. So that was a little bit more helpful, I think. But I think if I would have started from scratch, probably would have taken a little bit longer.
What was the response after it was published in Science? The press releases, a lot of publicity generated. So do people contact you?
Yes, for sure. I think people have contacted more to show interest in my research. You get invited to give more seminars. I think people want to hear more about what you've been doing. And it definitely helped, definitely opened doors. And I think it made me more confident also to, like, for example, apply for more things related to microbiota work, because I felt like my work was there and more people were exposed to it and to my ideas. Definitely helps with confidence. I think it works both ways. Like, people look for your work more and you feel more confident, especially as a junior professor, that people are actually interested in what you're doing and what you have to say.
And finally, what are your plans for the future? Looking for people, collaborating. I can imagine many things happening.
I think the way that my work is, collaboration is essential because you can't know it all. And we're really going from host, microbiota, and disease outcome. So one of the things that my work needs is people that can actually manipulate microbes, like other microbes from the microbiota, like people that can advance the field of making genetic mutants in resident members of the microbiota, because that would really help with understanding mechanism and like if you take away a particular metabolite or a pathway in a microbe that you feel like is important, what happens. And people that understand the metabolic capacity because since we come more from an infectious disease, I understand more about what's happening with Salmonella, with E. coli, but not necessarily with other members of the microbiota. And one other thing that we're definitely interested is in translational work. I think, like, really understanding if what we use a lot of mouse models, right, animal models for human disease, but we don't necessarily use human samples at the moment, or so definitely work with like clinicians or people that have access to human samples that can really help us determine if the things that we're seeing in our systems are actually happening in humans too. That would be very important for, I think, for us, for our work to get into. When you ask about therapeutics and everything, I think this bridge between all of our basic science work to a clinical environment is, for that to happen, we definitely need collaboration with people that do translational work.
And really, finally, I was just wondering what you would say were the challenges that young researchers of the 21st century have to overcome to actually achieve some of their goals in their research.
Yeah, I think the things that there are like three things that are very important. One is money, right? Funding, but everyone knows that that's difficult. Another one is a good environment around you, like support from senior faculty. But one of the things that I feel like it's very important is having good people in the lab, having people that are motivated in your lab, people that are as passionate about your research as you are, and that, especially with everything that has happened this year, right, to keep people motivated. And when I think about people, I feel like the trainees and the people that work with us, they are demanding different things from us as PIs than maybe we did from the generation before us. I feel like now when you talk about being a mentor or being someone that is like supervising it, I think the umbrella just open. I think the things that you need to be aware of for your people are maybe much way more complicated than maybe like a few years ago, right? Like we have to be more aware of, which is a good thing. It's just different. Like you have to be more aware of the mental health, or be more aware that not everyone wants to be a PI. Some people want to go into a different career path, and you have to support them into the different career options that they have. Or more people now want to have maybe a better work-life balance, or want to have more family. And so you, because I think it's a little bit more complex.
And a message for people who may be thinking about going into research on the microbiome, what would you say to them?
What I can say is that it's a very complex system, and it can be scary, but it can also be very exciting. I think there's so many questions that are still open, and so many things that we need to understand still. So I wouldn't let that complexity scare you away from the field. Instead, I would go for it and just really look for people around you. Like you keep talking about collaboration, and that's very important. Like I think the only way we're going to answer those questions is if we collaborate and we bring different expertises together for the field. So if you're a PhD student or a postdoc is interested in the microbiome, I think it's actually a very exciting field to go into. And there's not going to be, there's more than enough questions for people to answer. So I would definitely encourage people to do it.
Well, thank you, Mariana. That was fascinating. We wish you all the best with your research, and stay in touch. Thank you. This concludes this episode of the Microbiome Research Podcast. Further information about the podcast is available on the Microbiome Research X website. On behalf of the editors of the MRX website, thank you for joining us, and we look forward to your company again.